Welcome to Baltimore, Hun.
Exploring Hun as a linguistic and identity marker in Baltimore.
You have to first put on a boa.
Oh.
That's step one. Step two. Anybody?
Glasses?
Can't I glasses?
Okay, I'll let you have that.
Beehive.
There you go.
Oh, beehive.
Yeah, because honestly, I've had to take some pictures for some crazy people to come in here because I think they walk in thinking I'm going to just be a Hun. Like, hey, dress the whole part. I'm like, I can't wear that thing all day. I'll die. And they're like, can you just put the beehive on and go out front and stand by the flamingo? And as soon as I put that beehive on and the boa and the glasses, all of a sudden, you instantly feel like you're a Hun.
So what is a Hun?
What does it mean?
Those are the questions that we're going to try to answer in this podcast. If you're from Maryland, you might have heard about the famous Welcome to Baltimore Hun sign man. Perhaps you've seen some John Waters films, or been to the Hunfest Summer Festival, or perhaps you, like many people, have never thought about Baltimore at all. Outside of Maryland, Baltimore is known for a lot of things, and a lot of them revolve around issues presented in TV shows like The Wire or Homicide.
But a distinct part of Baltimore is what is known here as Baltimoreese, which is the dialect spoken by certain communities around the city. Highland Town, Hamden, Canton, Federal Hill, and Dundalk, among others. In particular, we're going to focus here on the emergence of the cultural phenomenon known as the Baltimore Hun, and the increased awareness of the word Hun as a key part of Baltimore speech and Baltimore identity.
Hi, I'm Heidi Faust, a PhD student in the Language, Literacy, and Culture program at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
And I'm Holly Britton, a sociolinguistics and applied linguistics student at UMBC. Together, Hyde and I hit the streets of Baltimore to investigate the use of the word Hun and how it serves as a cultural and linguistic marker. Follow us as we explore the areas of Baltimore known for Hun culture and try to find out what the word Hun means here.
We will first explain the origins, meanings, and users of the word Hun, with help from linguistic experts and true Baltimore speakers. In our second section, we'll explore the implications of the word and characteristics associated with the Hun identity.
We uncover the Baltimore Hun as a recent cultural phenomenon, the place of the Hun in Baltimore culture, and the impact of the Hun as a character or person on how the word Hun is used. We'll wrap up with a discussion of the impact of changing Baltimore demographics and the commercialized image of the Hun in local linguistic arenas and attitudes.
In our first attempt to understand the word Hun, Holly and I went to the neighborhood known as Hamden, which has a well-known cafe that is called Cafe Hun, as well as a store beside it called Hun Town, which sells Hun-related items and Baltimore memorabilia. We stopped by Cafe Hun and Hun Town to see if we could find out what Hun means.
So here on the corner of Roland and 36th Street in downtown Hamden, and we're standing in front of Hun Bar, and across the street is Hun Town, decorated with pink flamingos, and looks like all kinds of outrageous leopard skin and tiger print outfits. Walking down the street a little further is Cafe Hun. Now outside Cafe Hun, you can see this giant pink flamingo. We're entering Hun Town. We're going to get in touch with our inner Hun. We're here to check out what we could do to get in touch with our inner Hun. So what is a Hun?
Yeah,
what does that mean?
Even when I place orders for stuff, they're like, this is Hun, Hun Town? I'm like, no, it's Hun. They're like, what does it mean? I'm like, it's short for honey, baby cake, sweet cheeks. They're like, oh, we love it.
Just a few blocks away from Cafe Hun, where the local festival known as Hun Fest takes place every summer, we talked to Pastor Michael Debski at St. Luke's Evangelical Lutheran Church. As we enter the church, the sign outside reads, God bless you, Hun.
First thing to ask would just be what you could tell us about the word Hun.
I mean, it's used across the country at different levels. It just has a more frequent use here. I mean, I can listen in a convenience store and have a clerk end everything that she says with Hun.
We also elicited the knowledge of two cultural and linguistic experts in understanding the origins and meanings of the word Hun. We're here with Dr. Mary Rizzo. She has a PhD in American Studies and has done extensive research about the Hun culture in Baltimore. Can you tell us what you know about the word Hun?
The word Hun clearly is a shortened form of the word honey, as everyone knows. And so it's used as a sort of term of endearment, and it's been located, I think, most specifically with a certain class and ethnic
groups in Baltimore. So generally speaking, I think those are, you know, sort of white working class ethnic populations that had been in areas of the city like Hamden or Highland Town or Dundalk primarily. And it also, I think, is connected to the southern migration that happened of whites that came into Baltimore from the Appalachians and from other areas in the south. So that there's a connection, I think, with this, you know, southern culture. And so the word Hun gets used by this community as a way, I think, of marking who's inside the community so that people get called Hun in a very offhanded, informal way, but it's a method of sort of suggesting that the person being called Hun is part of this larger community.
We also interviewed Dr. Michael Adams of Indiana University, who was able to confirm Mary's understanding of the word Hun.
My name is Michael Adams. I'm associate professor of English at Indiana University in Bloomington and editor of the journal American Speech.
What can you tell us about the meaning or origins of the word Hun?
Its origin is really uninteresting because it's a clipping from honey as a term of endearment, often used in service settings, and is not unlike deer used in other places in the country rather than Hun, but that Hun is kind of, if not unique, at least special to Baltimore use. But there's no trick to how it came to be. There's a whole range of words that people use as terms of endearment that seem to come from food, often bakery items like honey buns or sugar cakes. And whether somebody being called sugar, for instance, is just use of the word sugar sweet for a person or whether it's a clipping from sugar cake is something we probably can't ever really determine. The same thing with honey and honey bun or something like that. But the association is obviously with sweetie or something, you know, familiar. Hun is in there somewhere. It's in that domain, semantically and functionally. It's not different in type from what people do all over the place. What seems to be different is that, very specifically, regionally, Hun is the form that people have adopted and promoted in the Baltimore area, or in Baltimore particularly. Where in another part of the country, some other city, people might be disposed to another item of that kind.
What we've seen in Baltimore recently is the word Hun acquiring an additional and strongly local meaning. As Hun became used more frequently, it became associated with a new kind of Baltimore persona, the Baltimore Hun.
You got this big phenomenon, and as soon as people recognize that they can participate in it, there's got to be a word for the activity of being a Hun. And there's got to be a way to become a Hun, if that's something you desire to do. So the form is really just following the phenomenon.
This expansion of Hun into all these new fields, for the activity of being a Hun, of becoming a Hun, and others, becomes all the more prominent during the biggest Hun event, Hunfest. Women of all ages attend this vibrant annual summer festival, where colorful Hun contests and beauty pageants allow them to get in touch with their inner Hun.
And of course, you know, we dress up crazy, the beehives and whatnot, on the Hun Fest.
Okay. Can you talk about how you dress?
You put on those high beehive wigs and the cat eye glasses, and you put your hair up in rollers, because that's what the Huns were famous for, and you're just crazy. You just dress crazy.
The word Hun calls up images of a particular type of person. Though the Hun identity is linked with the outward appearance and style, a large part of that identity is linked to the language itself. During the Hun Fest, the Hun character is largely based on the way she speaks. The particular Baltimore pronunciation and slang creates the identity, which, as we'll hear from Professor Adams, is a way of portraying and maintaining that proud and fun local identity associated with Baltimore.
Well, you can your identity with language generally by trying to fit in with the language that you use, accommodate the needs of a group to which you belong and with which you want to identify. We're social beings. Language is often an instrument of doing that.
In investigating the use of the term Hun in Baltimore, we came across the term Balmerese, which is how locals refer to the Baltimore dialect or accent. One of the main words that Balmerese is famous for is the word Hun. But there are other identifiable words, phrases, and pronunciations as well. Let's listen to a few examples.
Of course, my mother said a whole lot of other weird Baltimore slangy terms, too.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
Like ambulance.
Ambulance?
Yeah, ambulance. Yeah.
For ambulance?
Ambulance. Yeah. My mother always said zinc.
Zinc, yeah.
And we got in conversation once at length about, she'd always say, like, we had a cookout, like, go grab the aluminum pool.
I'm like, Mom, it's not full. Oil. That was my whole house.
Yeah, it's not Hantaga, it's just the normal for us.
The pronunciations, I mean, there's, like, THs are often F, like, instead of birthday, it would be birthday. But I didn't hear the difference until I was around other people. And then in college, you know, when people are from different areas, oh, you say your W's funny, or O is an O instead of an O.
We asked expert Mary Rizzo to help us understand the connection between Balmorese and the word Hun.
Can you talk a little bit more about that language that's typical of Baltimore and how Hun fits into that?
Yeah, so the idea that there's this Baltimore dialect called Balmer is, you know, is really strong, and it certainly is true. I mean, there certainly is a sort of particular pattern of speech. As far as I understand, it's sort of a connection between kind of Appalachian Southern speech patterns and, you know, sort of this white working class speech pattern. And so the meaning of that dialect, I think, has changed, right? So that I've talked to a lot of women who have gone to HunFest, and a lot of them are native Baltimoreans from working class families. And a lot of them have told me that when they were growing up, their parents realized that if they wanted to be middle class, they had to lose that accent. They had to get rid of that dialect. And so they were really taught not to speak that way. And in order to become successful, most of them did lose it on purpose. At the same time, I think you see within Baltimore a way in which people want to, kind of jokingly celebrate this dialect as well. So you'll see people who, use this kind of language, like Hun, for example. Also, there's like certain ways of pronouncing different words. Balmer being a great example. Instead of saying Baltimore, you say Balmer, as a way to show kind of a pride in having that dialect. So I think those two things go together. On one hand, within the larger culture, this dialect marked someone as working class and maybe uneducated. On the other hand, within that community, it was seen as a source of pride as well, although pride with kind of a joking aspect to it.
Several of our interviewees had purposefully changed their accent.
In school, they did try to drum that out of you. You know, when you're subjected to that sort of thing, you know, and you're a kid like that, you want to try to improve. It's not how I talk anymore, but it's who I am. I mean, those are my roots.
It wasn't until probably I went to high school or college, even, that I started to see how other people saw Baltimore. Yes. That's when I made an effort to lose my accent.
Yeah.
We asked Michael Adams about this Balmorese and the use of the word Hun, and whether or not it was slang, and how it fit into the identity of the locals.
Baltimoreans would consider them slang. That's the social level they would hear in the word. It would be a way of establishing your social identity, not your regional identity, but then it's located in just this one region. One way of putting it is, it's slang in Baltimore, but it's a regionalism to anybody who's outside of Baltimore. It's slang of a specific place.
As we investigated the word Hun as a linguistic and identity marker in Baltimore, we were primarily interested in questions such as, who uses the word Hun? How do they use it? What does it mean? And as we found, most locals had similar opinions.
For me, it was my grandmother. It was my mother, like working class chick. No, just a real woman, a real working woman. I mean, my grandmother put an S on the end of it. She called all of us Huns. She was always like, come on, little Huns. Come on, Huns. So that's what we were called all growing up. We were all plural.
Who uses the word Hun?
Mostly ladies.
Is there a specific age group? Or
no. Well, this generation would. Probably the older generation that is familiar with the word Hun. 40, 50, 60. It all depends on who you're talking to as to whether or not you say Hun.
Oh, is there someone you would not say Hun to?
Yes. When I was working in retail, I said Hun to a customer, and she got very vicious. I am not your Hun, so please don't call me Hun. Some people get offended, but I don't find it offensive because I think it's a friendly saying because it is a Baltimore saying.
There's a certain personality that use the word Hun to. Mostly women. I can't say that I associate it too much with men, but mostly women. And it was an endearing type of thing that almost categorized a certain area of people.
I think it's, older generation. That's what I was going to say. I mean, I've never heard any children or, tweens or anything like that use it, unless they're making fun of us. But I still have people everywhere I go, Rite Aid, McDonald's, wherever, have a good
good day, hun. Thanks, hun.
You hun everyone.
So hun is a verb as well. You can hun someone?
Yeah, you can hun someone.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but let's make something up. It sounds good, doesn't it? Maybe if you hun someone, like you sneak in the middle of the night and you leopard their place and like cover them in bows. But I guess if you hun someone, you're saying hun, you know, like you're hunting them.
We were hunting him, giving him this pin. If you said, I hun Holly, then I would think that you did her hair and her makeup. Like you might say, if you were doing something related to like a caricature, you might say, I was out hunting.
We went, Debbie and I went out hunting last week for my birthday.
You don't use it in like a socializing context. Yeah. You would, you use it as like, yeah, like
we got all hunged up and went out to play.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And then I kind of knew what you meant, like we got all dolled up and we went out.
Yeah.
The making of the word hun into a verb and an adjective might seem strange. It is a frequent occurrence. Just think of all the new phrases that come along with the internet. Telling someone to Google it seems completely normal. Language is always changing, and so it makes sense that people would take the word hun, which was originally a noun, and turn it into a verb. As you heard from Professor Michael Adams before, once people understand the phenomenon of the hun, they create ways to describe the act of participating in it, or becoming the phenomenon. Here's Professor Michael Adams again on the linguistic process that occurs during the creation of the verb to hun.
Hun was verbed. That's what they would say the process was. But it's a functional shift, or some people call it a conversion, from one part of speech is the way you learn it in school, from noun to verb, or a lexical category is what a linguist might call. It's not an unfamiliar way of making up new vocabulary and putting the old vocabulary we've got to new uses, but it's not the dominant way. And on the one hand, you could say, that's just trivial. There's a word and you can move it into different parts of speech by adding a suffix or whatever. It happens all of the time. It's not a big deal. But when you're in the setting and using the words, it's fun and it's a way of acknowledging the value of the phenomenon to you. And it's actually in making those new forms that you are further constructing the identity that's associated with the hun phenomenon. You're not just referring to it, you're participating in it, and you're participating in it on two levels. You're participating in it because you are getting hunned up, but you are also naming that. You're owning that activity of getting hunned up. So I view that as exciting and special, and ultimately human, just part of who we are, and that when you speak like that, you're celebrating being human, and in this case, not just being human generally, but being a human in Baltimore at a particular time, participating in that phenomenon.
We also visited Canton to see what local community members had to say. With the help of the Hatton Senior Center, we interviewed 20 native Baltimore speakers ranging in age from 30 to 80 years old, and two non-natives who had lived in Baltimore for over 10 years. 16 of these 20 speakers were over 65 years old. Can you tell us what you know about the word hun?
Here in Baltimore, it's a tradition.
It's just something that's normal. It's like a local thing.
It's just part of our heritage.
Well, it's an old Baltimore saying that we just automatically say hun, so you know we're from Baltimore. It means the spirit of Baltimore, the spirit of your community, and overall friendliness among each other. You just automatically say hun when you're from Baltimore.
When I hear hun, I'm looking for a certain personality, like the old curler, the rollers in the
beehive
hair, the beehive haircut, yeah, and they used to wear a lot of babushkas over the rollers at those times. Very exaggerated glasses, whether they were sunglasses or regular glasses.
Is hun used consistently throughout Baltimore?
I mean, sometimes it's just for fun, to be funny. But people who are older than me, generally it's just part and parcel with their language. It's what they say.
Hampton is a big area, I think, where that's along York Road. My affiliation or knowing the word came about through the musical Hairspray and through this south sort of section of town, and most important, the Canton area, where I came to work 22 years ago. But even before that, that hun, everybody was hun. And so now we say it jokingly a lot over here. We're from St. Bridget hun, so, or we're from Canton hun. I think Canton is the big relationship. It, it has a closeness that it knits people together. It lets people speak, where today people don't talk to each other anymore. Years ago, people sat out in the front stoops and everybody knew anyone and talked to everyone. And I think that's where that kind of word originates. And like you said, you don't know their names, but they're Hun, which is an endearing term.
There were other people we interviewed who had very personal connections to Hun. Heidi Moore Transetti and her mother, Rita Moore, are native Baltimoreans, whose family had lived in Baltimore since 1898. In this next clip, you'll hear her share connections to the meaning of the word Hun, which go hand in hand with a long tradition of a close-knit community.
The house my parents bought is across the street from the house she grew up in. Relatives, everybody lived within one city block in either direction of each other.
As long as I can remember, everybody used to work on my father called my mother Hun, my grandmother and great-grandmother and great-aunts, everybody always called everybody Hun. I mean, it was like a term of endearment. They didn't call them by their names, or you did, you would still add honey afterwards. It was a matter of being a loving way to talk to people that you cared about.
We expected to find similar answers to our question about the use of the word Hun, but instead what we found was a word in flux. The varying usages of the word Hun reflect a changing culture and image of Baltimore. As our interviewees were eager to point out, not all Baltimore speakers use the word Hun as a term of endearment. It's not a widespread feature of Baltimore speech. Mary Rizzo helped us understand the use of this word and how it was tied to the history of Hamden, which for many years was primarily a white neighborhood within Baltimore.
So would you see, you say primarily white working class women, would you see younger women using Hun, children, would you see African American women using the word Hun? How does that all play out?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, and I think that overall, I think that women who use the word Hun like unselfconsciously, sort of as part of their natural speech, are probably more the, you know, the older white working class women. For younger women who may use it, there's possibly a cohort of younger women who use it self-consciously, you know, in the sense that they realize that identity is out there, and so they've kind of adopted it as part of their language, but more self-consciously than, you know, than that. Now, the question of African Americans' use of the word Hun, I think, is very interesting. I think, generally speaking, that African Americans would primarily use the word honey in the same way that the sort of white working class women would use the word Hun. So there's a little bit of a distinction there. And it's actually interesting. A few years ago, I was at Hun Fest, and I was interviewing people who were there. And I was interviewing an African-American woman who was there with her granddaughter. And this woman, I asked her about exactly this question, sort of the use of the word Hun and, you know, what she thought of it as an African-American woman. And her perspective was very interesting. She said that when she was younger, that if you went into a neighborhood like Hamden, which was primarily white and is still primarily white, that if you went into a neighborhood like Hamden and someone used the word Hun towards you, if you were African American, it was done in a slightly sneering way, and it was done as a way to show you that you really didn't belong. So that the inflection and the tone was a way to, again, mark that kind of boundary, those racial boundaries. That was her perspective. And I think, you know, it's really interesting the way in which this term, you know, has such a positive spin most of the time, but we've got to also see that it's got a negative possibility there too, because marking of community is always saying who's inside and who's outside. So that image of Hamden as isolated is not just something that happened accidentally. I mean, Hamden remained a closed community because that community wanted to be that way. You know, like many white ethnic communities, there was a real desire to keep out outsiders, and you know, in many ways, this has this happens for a lot of really logical reasons. You know, you've got people who are working class, so they want to stick together and, you know, help each other out, and you know, helping out people in their family or, you know, in their ethnic group. So you get this kind of enclave there. But in Hamden, it also got taken much farther than that too. So, you know, there's certainly stories of the Ku Klux Klan being in Hamden in the 1920s and later having a pretty big presence in Hamden, actually. And And even in the 80s, stories of black business owners trying to open stores in Hampton and experiencing violence for doing that. So the history of Hampton is a lot about the history of that kind of racial separation. So, and I think then getting back to the Hun, what becomes one of the things that's problematic about the Hun becoming the image of Hampton is that, you know, the Hun is very much a white image. It's a linguistically marks a white identity in the image of the Hun. It is almost 100% of the time depicted as white. So you've got this white, nurturing kind of female figure becoming the image of this neighborhood at the same time that the rest of the city of Baltimore is increasingly not white. So why is that image versus something else becoming so popular? Why is that image drawing people to a neighborhood like Hampton? I think these are the questions that, you know, you have to ask yourself when you're thinking about the connection of an identity to a city.
Professor Michael Adams also weighed in with further thoughts.
There's common usage that ends up socially distinctive. One group, not necessarily consciously, speaking in ways different from another identifiable group. It wouldn't be the first time in the history of American English that African Americans and white Americans in the same community have had some distinctive features in their speech. And I suppose that Hun or honey could be one of those differences.
We are beginning to see the transition of the word Hun not only used in language, but also informing an identity unique to specific populations of Baltimore community members in very specific areas. We will explore this identity and the associated images in our next section of our podcast.
Aside from the word Hun, as a tagline at the end of sentences, like "Welcome to Canton, Hun," we also learned about the identity associated with the Baltimore Hun and the culture that surrounds it. In this part of the podcast, we differentiate between the use of the word Hun as a term of endearment and the use of the word Hun to refer to a character or type of personality. Hun with a capital H, we might say.
The Hun image, I'd say, is the generation older than you.
Yes, we just carried it on. They project the Hun as everybody wears a beehive and cat's eye glasses and the hot pink lipstick and the false eyelashes.
But that became a caricature. I mean, that wasn't, you know, there were some things that have now become a caricature of the image. I don't know if it's because of the commercial success or because, you know, you have to kind of make it larger than life to keep it going and to make people interested. But I think in that same hand, some people have been insulted by it.
You just heard again from Heidi Moore Transetti, a native Baltimorean who won the Baltimore's Best Hun contest at the second Hun Fest. Her mother, Rita, won the first. What you heard Heidi describe is the new cultural phenomenon taking shape within Baltimore. In recent years, the word Hun, capital H, has come to describe a new commercialized kind of identity. While it was originally intended as a way to celebrate the hardworking women of Baltimore of the post-World War II through the 1960s era, for some, this new flamboyant, bright portrayal of the Hun seems farcical. You heard Heidi say how some are insulted by it. Events like the Hun Fest, which embody this kind of vibrant, beehive, boa-wearing, saucy woman, appear in contrast to the Rosie the Riveter mentality of the original Hun. What we've seen happening in Baltimore is this new identity coming about through commercialization, with women relating to this new fun image even while they might relate to the determined, hardworking one. But by doing this, younger generations who are not original Huns could feel like they're living out a kind of over-the-top character. In the following clips, you'll hear Heidi and Rita give first-hand experience on the new complicated duality of Hun identity and why women need this new fun way of connecting.
We have a bunch of Huns. And, you know, basically, they're independent women who have survived everything life has thrown at us and are very supportive of other women and that have been through hard times. And
but why couldn't they have those people at a festival? Like, why couldn't they just say, hey, you're a regular woman, but you're also a Hun? I mean, that wouldn't be any fun, really. I mean, it wouldn't be any fun. Nobody would come to a festival where they were like, hey, Rita, you're pretty cool. Just go up on stage and be yourself. I mean, you're still yourself, but it's an exaggerated version of yourself. It's really interesting because you'll see some people who are Huns, but then, like you, for instance, you're a Hun, but you come to the festival and you're like a more exaggerated version of yourself.
Right.
And you'll have people who come just to watch, some people who don't quite get it, but they're still there and they're enjoying themselves. And then on the same block, you'll have a real Hun
sitting on her front steps, looking at everybody. Like, so it's a really interesting mix, because to them, it seems like, why are these people dressing up and parading around and pretending they're a hun?
Pretending they're like
me. And they may not even know that they're a hun in our eyes. It can be kind of a culture clash.
You know. Yeah, but exaggerated to the extreme. Just make fun. Good fun of it.
But some people...
And some people really...
are comforted by it at the same time and find it, you know, oh, that's home, that's who we are, that's what we do.
Women like Heidi and Rita act out their celebration of the original Hun by becoming the new. Younger generations or non-locals might only recognize this new character as an exaggeration.
As we dug deeper into this conflicting dual nature and cultural clash of the Baltimore Hun, we turned again to Mary Rizzo for guidance.
And is the Hun image changing over time, or do you think it's changing with HunFest?
I definitely think it's changing over time, and I think it's changing with HunFest, too. So, you know, I don't think there's any evidence that anyone used the word Hun to describe themselves, really before Denise Whiting and the Cafe Hun. I mean, there's certainly no evidence that I've found of the use of the term in that regard. So Hun really was just a sort of, term of endearment that was used within this particular community. So right there you see the way in which the Cafe Hun and HunFest have created a kind of branded identity that's really located with these specific characteristics that I already mentioned. The other part of this, too, is I think someone like John Waters and his movies, you know, obviously John Waters is from Baltimore, and, you know, all of his movies are set in Baltimore and talk about Baltimore. He also depicts women who would be referred to as Huns, even though he doesn't call them that in his movies. So I think, you know, there was a connection that Denise Whiting was making with the Cafe Hun that brought the sort of John Waters image in and then gave people an opportunity to actually enact it and perform it in everyday life. So it's become, I think, increasingly specific.
We heard similar stories from our interviewees, both younger and older generations. Until it became an identity, a term for a group of women or a type of woman, rather than just a word of endearment, Hun had no other major significance as a marker of Baltimore identity. While the type of woman definitely existed within Baltimore prior to HunFest and this new identity, it wasn't until there was a name for the group that the idea of the image took off. It raised people's awareness of their use of the term Hun and gave them specific cultural identity with which to identify. Even the image of the new Hun has changed within the last decade.
If you look at HunFest, for example, and I started going to HunFest in, I think, 2002, so it had already been going on for a few years. At that time, women dressed up in a lot of different ways to perform as a Hun. Today, if you go, there's much less variation. There are kind of a couple ways that women dress up to be a Hun, and you'll see now that they sell big beehive wigs or whatever. So some women still make their own outfits, but, you know, you could just as easily buy everything that you need. So you sort of see a process where this kind of variety, where women were sort of expressing themselves in all these different ways, has kind of gotten a little bit simplified into one or two different variations of the Hun.
This simplification of the Hun image might be a reason for part of the controversy over Hun's authenticity. The new Hun doesn't speak to the diversity of the original women, and the outward physical projection of a Hun is readily accessible in stores. In the next clip, Mary brings up an identity that few of our participants have discussed, that of the male Baltimore Hun. The vast majority of speakers viewed a Hun as a female character, and little was said about the existence of the male version of it.
Today, you know, right now, most people would say a Hun is a woman. But if you talk to a lot of people in Baltimore, older people in Baltimore, you know, they would say, I think a lot of them would also say that a Hun could be a man as well. But because HunFest focuses on this female character, it's become, I think, much more associated with, you know, with a woman being the Hun. So that at HunFest in the early days, they would have a separate contest. You know, they have the best Hun contest for women. They would have a separate contest for men who could best speak in the Baltimore dialect, Balmerese. So it was sort of a language contest for men, whereas dressing up was for women, but both were sort of seen as part of the Hun image. I don't know that, you know, there's that image has, you know, sort of subsisted over time as much. But I think, you know, the male Hun is sort of the exact complement to the female Hun. So, you know, again, the same sort of white working class background, the same kind of time period, you know, sort of that, like, post-World War II moment, you know, late 1950s, early 1960s kind of time. And I think it's very much related in regards, in a similar way to the female Hun, to a sense of a particular type of community. So that, you know, the man who would use the word Hun, which, you know, certainly happens, is someone who is also marking who is within the community. So actually there was an incident, now it was, you know, many, many years ago, where a female police officer pulled over a man in Baltimore, and he called her Hun. And she was not happy with that. And it sort of started a little bit of a debate over whether Hun is a sexist term. So that's another aspect of it. You know, when a man calls a woman a Hun, you know, is it sexist? You know, when a woman calls a man Hun or a woman calls another woman Hun, you know, it's got a different kind of quality.
Though the male Hun might embody the same traits and cultural background as the original female Hun, societal pressures have called into question the implicit differences between male and female usages. It is primarily through female use that the term takes on a deeper, more meaningful purpose.
Women use the word Hun, there's a real maternal aspect to it. And I think, you know, you see this at the Cafe Hun a lot, that there's a way in which the Hun identity and the use of the word Hun in that way makes people feel like they're part of a nurturing, kind of welcoming environment. You know, city life is often seen as kind of dodgy. You know, Baltimore, as we know, is probably most known for being pretty dangerous. And it's got a very, it's a very bad image in many ways, right? People see the city of Baltimore as a place that they don't necessarily want to hang out in because it's dangerous. So I think the Hun as an image and connecting to certain neighborhoods really helps to try to allay that image by creating this kind of nurturing, welcoming environment. Now, the fact that that's connected with a white working class woman, I think, is very interesting. And, you know, certainly raises, I think, a lot of questions about how you portray a neighborhood or a city that is trying to sell itself to tourists, for example, or to more upscale residents.
As we began to understand a traditional and more recent Hun identity, we realized that Hun was changing in Baltimore. We'll explore changing Baltimore demographics, language commodification of Hun, and the future use of the term in our next section of our podcast.
And I don't think that the hand and stuff is particularly genuine. I don't know, I see the whole people going up and pretending that they're Huns, and I never know whether it's good-natured or looking down their nose.
But what if it's people who are from the area?
And that would be okay. I have such mixed feelings about that.
The use of the word Hun, in its original sense, recalled by images of the true Hun, is steadily changing with subsequent generations. Mixing of cultures and shifts in language diversify cultural identity. Now Hun is tied to the commercialism and the new image of the Hun, that is, Hun with a capital H, which gives speakers a name and identity for something that was taken as simply natural before.
The people who lived in my community, that community was entirely dismantled by virtue of real estate, and all of the Huns moved elsewhere, out in the counties and stuff, and the younger people moved in and took our homes. So there's a whole other different culture in South Baltimore / Federal Hill now. And the fabric of that society has completely unraveled.
The community of Baltimore is changing. Neighborhoods are being restructured, and there is an influx of young migrants to the city. And the impact of some of the older generations is fading. These changes are shifting the Baltimore culture and identity.
Well, the whole culture was decimated. Really, it was. Very sad. I was very sad to leave the neighborhood. I mean, there are so few people who were born and raised in South Baltimore who still live there. Everybody knew everybody's business, and that's just all gone, too. I mean, people used to sit out on the steps. New people call it stoops, but we never did. We sat on the steps, sometimes till 2 and 3 in the morning, sometimes till the newspaper was delivered, and, you know, talk and carry on and so forth. I mean, but you don't do that anymore either.
For the older Baltimore speakers who we talked to, the word hun calls up memories of a past that is slipping away. They use the word to reconnect, to pull some of the old culture forward, to bring it to the current generations, to bring back the community culture. There's disagreement over whether or not younger speakers or non-locals lose the original intent of the celebration of the hun and the use of the word.
That's the thing. Like, some things got taken, like, completely out of context, but the reality of it is it's fun. You know, that's what it's about. We love those chicks. We're not making fun of them.
We were beginning to see two hun identities emerge in our discussions. One of the hard-working 60-something community member, and the more commercialized caricature of the Hunfest hun. We asked Dr. Mary Rizzo to help us understand the difference.
Can you talk a little bit about the disparity between the kind of the commercialized hun and the real hun, and what makes a hun?
I think, you know, we have to be really careful in making that distinction. There's a tendency to, you know, say that there's like an authentic hun, but, you know, I don't know how you would like sort of locate that. I mean, you know, obviously any expressions of hun are hard to say that they're authentic today when we live in a world in which, you know, sort of the images of the hun are everywhere in Baltimore, at least. But I think that, you know, in talking about the creation of the commercial image of hun, I mean, it's definitely clear that you can see some particular markers. And I think, touching on a couple of things that I've already mentioned, but I think the connection of a particular kind of style, which allows people to, allows some people to get dressed up in that style and feel that it's, a really positive thing. It also allows other people to kind of laugh at it in not necessarily a mocking way, but definitely to laugh at it. So, you know, it has an aspect where it touches on both of those kinds of sets of responses. But also, I think the personality characteristics that go along with what is a sort of branded image of hun is really interesting. And again, getting back to that idea about these were women who were seen as committed to their families, strong, working class women who also were really nurturing the members of their community. And I think that nurturing impulse is really added to that branded commercial identity. And for women today who would call themselves Huns, and there are many who are not necessarily, you know, quote-unquote authentic Huns because they're not of the generation that one would see, generally speaking, as an authentic Hun.
So what we're seeing is that Hun is used as a local linguistic marker in Baltimore, and it has been for many years, historically. But in more recent years, Hun has begun to emerge as a branded identity, and therefore the use of Hun has become a linguistic commodity. In 2010 and 2011, the owner of Cafe Hun, where we visited at the beginning of this podcast, caused quite a controversy when she trademarked the word Hun. In light of the trademark controversy, we asked Professor Michael Adams to help us understand the use of the word Hun in Baltimore as a commodity. He shared three types of language commodification with us.
It's just the sense that one group owns it and another group doesn't, or that somebody gets to call the shots about what it means or what it meant traditionally. And that's all socially negotiated. And the honest truth is, if people pick up on a usage and decide to bend it in another direction, there's not much anybody who's using the term can do about that. You can insist and you can prescribe, and you've got editorial pages in the newspapers, and you complain about how things aren't the same as they used to be. But truly, if people figure out that what you've got as a marker for your purposes can just as easily be a marker for their purposes, they can appropriate it easily, and there's no remedy against linguistic change. Now, there's another type of commodification which is interesting. It's called enregisterment by linguists, and it's when a community recognizes the distinctive character of a linguistic feature in its repertoire and says, this is a way we're going to describe ourselves publicly, and we're going to promote other people's understanding of us in this term, literally in this term, this thing that we use. So Canadians have their A. Upper Peninsula Michigan people get called youpers. Look, if this is the way everybody's going to think about us, we may as well take charge of that slang and promote it and make some money off of it. But at the same time, you're not at that point keeping it specially for yourself and your own social uses. You're projecting it outward to say, this is how you can identify me. And you're agreeing about that when you commodify of speech. So Hun is ripe for that type of commodification. You could have Hun websites, Hun chat rooms, and Hun t-shirts, and trademark characters, I suppose. They get used as emblems to indicate Hun, but what you're really indicating is the peculiar Baltimore temperament. It becomes a marker for the culture of Baltimore, not just something that people say.
Baltimoreans are taking up this new image of the Hun and making it their own, and the explosion of all things Hun is only beginning. But the new Hun doesn't eradicate the original hard-working woman it celebrates. As Rita says,
people work very hard to develop the image of what they think a Hun is, and people say to me, what's it take to be a Hun? And I say, and I just to myself.
In our research, we learned how something as little as the word Hun can be tied to concepts so complex. As a linguistic marker, the face and location of Hun is changing. Whether you are a local or a visitor to Baltimore, there's no doubt you'll be able to enjoy the complex language variation that has captured the imagination of filmmakers like John Waters and sociolinguists alike. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and in the true words of a Baltimorean,
have a nice day, Hun.
The production of this podcast relied upon the generous contributions of our cultural and linguistic experts and local Baltimoreans. Many thanks to those that made this podcast possible.
Pastor Michael Dubsky,
Heidi Moore Transetti and Rita Moore,
Huntown and Cafe Hun,
Elaine Hall and the community members of the Hatton Senior Center in Canton,
Dr. Mary Rizzo,
Dr. Michael Adams,
Dr. Christine Mallinson.